We're back with another Press Play OK, your local music podcast, talking with local musicians and getting a deep dive into exactly who they are and what's happening across the local music scene. I'm Tip, and today I have with me a longtime Oklahoma musician who's been in just about every band you could possibly imagine, Chad Malone. Chad, thanks for talking with us today.
Hey, Tip. Good to see you, man.
So we'll get into all of the bands you've been in and the different styles you've played in and all that kind of stuff.
Please, not all of them.
Well, I don't know if we have time for that. But let's start towards the beginning.
Okay.
Tell us about growing up. How did music fit into your life at a young age?
Well, not to get into graphic detail, but we'll say, you know, unhappy childhoods are what they are. And I wasn't really good about having a lot of friends, per se. And there was a lot of hostility around, you know, just the 70s broken families. You know how it goes. And so not trying to act like it's any different than anybody else. But I felt very isolated. And music, I felt like, was the one thing that wasn't trying to mess with me or hurt me or humiliate me or anything like that. And it felt like it was the one thing that was truly honest and real. And I just gravitated towards it. And it just... The passion behind it, even simple stuff, fun stuff like Van Halen or something, you know, I was really into, just because it felt like a world that wasn't the one I lived in.
Who all were you listening to back then that kind of formed your original love for music?
Yeah, it's strange. I would say certainly classic rock, because that's just what was on the radio all the time. Until I really started paying closer attention. And then around 81, I think, MTV came around, so I would have been 11 years old. And I started seeing heavier stuff. I remember the first time I saw Iron Maiden on there. That pretty much screwed me up. Seeing Iron Maiden with the song Iron Maiden, off the record Iron Maiden, and then Eddie comes out, and it's all tough, and it's all angry. And that did me. I was in at that point.
When did you learn that you could actually write songs? Not just pick up a guitar and play, or not just sing into a microphone, but actually, you know, write songs and have something come across the way you want it to?
Oof. That's a hard call, because I still think I'm not very good at it. But I was obsessed with lyrics and writing in general when I was younger. I remember specifically I would sit in class, and instead of paying attention to what they were doing, I would write Iron Maiden lyrics in order from memory each record. I would just go down, and I was just obsessed with it. And I started getting more and more into writing my own stuff, you know, and I guess the poetry angle. And then songwriting... For me, it was always lyrics, and music was just a vehicle to express that. And I've been really lucky to work with people that are extremely talented and can take the basic structures of what I do, like in Larkin. Like, I'll write out a basic guitar bit and sing the melody with the lyrics, and they just grab it and take it as far as it can go. And in some of the previous bands I'd been in, I would try to write complete songs, but like in my, I guess, more successful band when Brother Inferior was around, I had the luxury of working with Ryan, and I thought we worked really well together. He did a lot of the music. I did some, but I always wrote all the lyrics, and we would put together. And then later, when I started playing guitar more, I started writing full songs. So it was a very large, long, arduous process of, you know, continually trying to improve upon what I'm doing. But still, for me, it's always a vehicle for lyrics is music. I'm not a big fan of, like, instrumental music.
Lyrics are definitely the prominent part of the songs that you write that I've heard anyway. I don't know of any Chad Malone songs where it's like super pretty guitar melodies or anything like that.
There is, I didn't write it.
But anyone who's, you know, social media friends with you, they know that you do poetry as well, and you just seem to write a lot. Like, what's the draw to that for you?
I think that's just where my mind is. I started social media is pretty much the only reason I started writing just poetry for poetry's sake. You know, I took a poetry class in high school years and years ago, and but for me it was just songs. It was always songs. You know, I never wrote anything that wasn't planned on being in a punk band, basically. And later, I just, you know, on your usual Facebook's status updates, I just started writing what I was doing, but doing it in poetry form because I thought it was funny. And that just sort of ballooned into trying to write things more for me. And most of everything I wrote was just something that would pop into my head, writing about whatever happens to be my situation at the moment, writing about Monday morning and going to work and how it sucks. And so I would write that, and that would be it. And eventually they started adding up, and I didn't really even realize how many I had done at that point.
So let's talk about the amount of music that you've actually been a part of.
Okay.
So just to name some bands, all right, Assembly of God, Concept of Nonsense, Larkin, Senior Fellows, The Leveling, The Kids, Brother Inferior. Just looking at those, you've been in a lot of different bands. How has your songwriting changed from one band to the next?
Well, I hope it's improved, but I think each band, I try to give it its own personality, like in the early days with Concept of Nonsense, and I'd say Brother Inferior and Assembly of God all kind of leaned a particular way as far as subject matter. Stylistically, things change, but that's just usually whatever the style of music we're leaning towards at the time. You know, we were heavily influenced in the Concept of Nonsense days by stuff like Cryptic Slaughter and Sick of It All, and our structures resembled that. And then in Brother Inferior, it was definitely more anarcho-punk and whatnot. And so while the topics remained similar, I always wrote a lot about labor issues because, I mean, that's what I worked fast food for a long time. How could you not write about worker struggles, you know? And living in the Bible Belt, I wrote a lot about, you know, religious issues that, you know, offended my sensibilities, if you will. And later, in Bring Down the Hammer, a little more focused on labor and also structurally a lot different because the songs were a lot shorter. I mean, basically chopped them down to less than a minute each. I didn't start really focusing on lyrics as more poetic until the Larkin days. Well, it was actually Rapparee before Larkin, essentially the same thing. When I started writing those, much more poetic approach and themes much different as well. I kept it much more personal, you know, like the typical Irish themes like failed romance and drunken bitterness and whatnot. And so I kind of stuck with it, you know, tried to revolve around my own life, but it's kind of focus on those themes. And I think that helped me a lot expand the way I view writing in general. At least I hope so, anyway. And, you know, it's nice to expand your horizons.
Absolutely. Well, and you've obviously done that over your whole career. And we'll talk more about those individual bands shortly. But I kind of want to get your take on the Tulsa music scene.
Okay.
And you've been around. So you were in Oklahoma City before you came here, right?
Or no.
Norman?
No. I was neither, actually. It's weird because after Brother Inferior broke up in 1999, when we got back from our European tour, the state of Tulsa was very frustrating, and I started a band in Oklahoma City called Assembly of God. So yes, we were an Oklahoma City band, but I did not live there.
Okay, so you were kind of part of both scenes at the time.
That time, yeah, and there really wasn't much of a Tulsa scene, if I may be so bold. When we got back, and we had been gone for a long time, the direction of the Tulsa scene, as far as my own view, was extremely disappointing and heavily involved in hard drugs. And I did not like the state of that. I might be a heavy drinker, yes, that is fair. But it looked like it had self-destructed while we were gone on that long six-month tour. And I just didn't want anything to do with it. I wanted something completely different, and I called up my friend Mike, Captain Death Metal from Subsanity, up in, he was living in Oklahoma City at the time. And I was like, let's start a band and I'll just come up there every Saturday and practice. And that's what happened. So we were based out of Oklahoma City and all that.
Okay.
Which is also how we got sued, I mean, which is weird, but that's a story in of itself.
You've seen how punk, I guess across the whole state, has changed over the last 40 or so years.
Yeah.
When you started going between then and now,
mm-hmm.
what are the biggest changes that you see in the punk scene in Tulsa?
Well, I think they go through feast and famine cycles, where there'll be a lot of new and exciting bands, and it usually revolves around a really strong band or a really cool venue, one of the two. And it will build on that. And then you'll go through where all the bands have folded, there's nowhere to play. And as far as the crowds go, it seems, maybe I'm just old and jaded, but it seems a lot more sectioned, like very, only parts of punk rock will go to certain punk rock shows, but won't go to other punk rock shows. Like, I remember in the 80s when it was, you know, hardcore, punk rock, oi music, whatever. We all went to the same gigs, even a lot of the metalheads. I mean, we all knew each other and, you know, we all went to the same gigs and really didn't think anything of it. And it wasn't anything different for bands like Asylum, who were just, you know, a heavy metal band, to play with Concept of Nonsense, you know, a thrash band and or hardcore band. And no one thought anything of it. But now, not only does that not happen, I think it's almost frowned upon. Like, people don't want to go see bands that aren't a very particular niche to what they are into.
What's your goal whenever you write music? Are you in it to have a good time? Are you trying to change the world? And has that changed as you got older?
Yes. I guess in my earlier punk days, I was a lot more naive. And yes, I mean, I wanted to write punk songs that would spur debate and get people thinking to my way of thinking. And I still hope that. I mean, you do hope that you can, if you're writing a political punk song, you hope you can put out some sort of statement that people will hopefully agree to or grab onto. And you know, I mean, when I write, I still hope for that, but I don't expect nor think that any of that will happen. If someone wants to come up to me and talk to me after, like, when Bring Down the Hammer was playing, we would talk very political subjects, or Senior Fellows for that matter. And if anybody wanted to discuss it, I'd be more than happy to do it. But it, I won't say became less important, but less of my focus, we'll say, as far as the political part of it.
So now you still, I mean, obviously, if you listen to The Shame, you know that there are still political songs in there.
Yeah, sort of.
Well.
I mean, yes, but not as...
In On Your Joke or, you know, yeah. It's still a serious song.
It is a serious song, and it's just not as, the band is not focused on one dynamic like it would have been in the Brother in Fury days, we'll say.
So you mentioned, you know, you said when you were younger, you were naive. Do you think that music and the lyrics that you write and all that kind of stuff can have an impact on the world around you?
I think it can. I think it can influence people, and people can make that impact. At least, you know, music is the great uniter, if you will. I mean, and it can bring a lot of people together and get people thinking about things that they didn't necessarily think about. I mean, think about the folk music that happened in the 60s, you know, that really grabbed a hold of a movement and brought everyone together, you know, and peaceniks and all that, and anti-war crowd and whatnot. It can be, but to think that, I don't know, there would be a level of how much credit. It's hard to say, man, because it's possible that it could bring a lot of people together, but at the same point, it is, on the other hand, just music. It's hard because it's such a, it's not just one thing. It's it's hard for me to explain.
Yeah, so I mean, maybe it might bring like-minded people together, but it's not changing minds all that much.
If it can get people to think about things, great. But yeah, I mean, it's hard to say because music isn't one thing.
Back when you were, as you put it, more naive, talking about your time in Brother Inferior, mm-hmm. if I think of a band that you were in that you were quote-unquote known for, it'd be Brother Inferior. You say that, you know, maybe that's just in the punk community.
In the punk community,
sure.
And yeah, certainly. We were the ones, we were really driven to, I won't say make it or do anything, and we certainly, you know, I mean, as far as in, if you tell most normal people that aren't involved in underground music that, you know, their idea of success and our idea of success is two very different things.
Sure.
We were able to release a bunch of records. We got to tour a lot, and I got to see parts of the world I never thought I'd ever see, and I never thought music would take me there. So in that sense, fantastic. I was just meaning, not necessarily politically, but just hoping that I was hoping the punk scene could turn out to be more and better than I thought it would be.
Back during that time, like mm-hmm. you mentioned, you did like a 6-month tour.
Yeah.
You all put out music on important labels. I'm not going to say they were major labels or anything like that.
In the
that,
punk world,
yeah,
yes.
Profane Existence and, you
and,
know, these...
And
these,
Havoc and yeah.
Yeah. What about that band worked so well at that time?
It's hard work. I mean, really, anyone that's going to tour, I would tell them the same thing. Really, it's just relentless. You've got to be on the road. You've got to play in front of people. You've got to play to empty crowds. And you have to believe in what you're doing and show passion behind it. I never thought we were that great. I thought we were a good band, and I thought we were really good live. And that kind of passion, I think, helped push us further along than I guess most punk bands get. And I think we were also lucky time-wise, because in the mid to late 90s, there was an upsurge in the kind of music we were playing. You know, getting to play with bands, you know, like Defiance and Osrotten, and we became really good friends with a lot of those bands. And getting to tour, you know, we toured a bit with Whorehouse Representatives, and we both kind of worked together and tried to build something with what we had. And so a lot of it was hard work, but a lot of it was luck and timing and, you know, I mean, like anything... We happen to be in the right place at the right time to get on some fantastic gigs. You know, when we played up in New York City for the first time, we just happened to be playing with a band from Japan that everyone was excited about, Asphort and Drop Dead. And then we played with Spaz out in California. I just begged our way onto shows. And it, just luck and getting to being put in front of an audience and taking that chance to impress a little bit, and like I said, also being relentless. We put out a record almost every year. We were on tour every year for our, you know, 5-6 year existence. So and then it just burnt itself out like things do.
Well, I mean, it was around for what, 6 years?
94 to almost 2000. We officially broke up at the end of the European tour, and I think it was Leipzig. I'm not sure. It was right after we played Berlin. And Ryan had decided with half the Tulsa scene to move up to Portland, and which is fine. I could feel it, and he knew it, that was our last hurrah. I was hoping it would go a little further, but it didn't. But yeah, so that ended in 99. So
if you look at a lot of your early bands, it's hardcore punk, punk rock, maybe a little on the heavier side, and then all of a sudden we get Larkin. Before that it was, what was it again?
Rappery. Which was basically less a band, more of a traveling party.
Ah.
But yeah, I mean, it was
a band.
Isn't
that what Larkin still is?
No, because if you would have saw Rappery, you wouldn't ask that. we pretty much picked up members willy-nilly. At one point we had 13 people.
Oh, wow.
And we never had a complete practice with everyone. The shows were beyond a train wreck. And it was awesome and embarrassing, brilliant and humiliating. I mean, it was all, and what happened at the end of that was after it ran about a couple of years, a couple of us split off and started a more concise version, which became Larkin. You know, like four of us, I think, started up Larkin with a total of six members.
So for those who don't know Larkin, Irish folk music, a little bit of punk in there as well. I mean,
yeah, it's I always say it's Irish folk with the energy of a punk band. You know, I mean, it's not too dissimilar. Yes, the Pogues are an easy comparison if you're familiar. I look at it more if the Dubliners, you know, had a full band behind them is what I want. Mm-hmm. But no more punk rock than that. And I'm certainly not like the Flogging Molly, Dropkick Murphys or anything like that. It's, plus, they're far more successful and good for them. But but yeah, I mean, it's folk music played with high energy.
Definitely draws a lot from traditional Irish music.
That's my intention.
What's your personal connection with Irish music?
I don't know. It was weird because, okay, like I said, I mean, I was born in 1970, and during the 70s growing up, I know my father was into a lot of folk rock at the time. You know, you looked at his reel-to-reels, which he had reel-to-reels. You know, you'd have stuff like America. You'd have all the folk band, like rockish, folkish stuff that was going on. And so I was just kind of familiar with it. And I remember, you know, and when I'm getting older and I'm only into metal, I'm only into punk rock and metal and all that. And I remember hearing New Model Army, you know, and it was the first time I thought I was allowed to like something that wasn't metal. You know, it had a folk music tendency to it. It had acoustic guitar, which is just, you know, unheard of in thrash bands, and became fascinated with it. And then a little bit later, I happened across some Irish folk songs, and no, it wasn't a drinking thing, believe it or not. I was quite sober at the time and fascinated with it. I loved the music, just called me in a way that nothing really had other than the early, like, if I felt the same way about that as I did the first time I heard Iron Maiden. You know, and like Cryptic Slaughter and like thrash and stuff. It spoke to me in a way that nothing really had musically. And I just kind of went with it. And I started running into old friends that liked the same thing. So we just started kind of compiling groups of people getting drunk later and just trying to play the music. And that just bands ballooned from that.
So you've been playing in Larkin for quite a long time.
If you count the Rapparee years, it's 23 years.
And you're pretty well known around Tulsa. You know,
it's flattering, but thank you.
Well, I I remember seeing you when I was a kid.
Oh, okay.
You know, it's always fun to see the community that comes out to see Larkin.
Sure.
What's it like switching from playing in front of one type of audience to another? Like when you go and play the Irish folk music, is it a different experience to perform that kind of music?
Different and the same. It's still obviously a performance. It's also with Larkin, it's much more endurance because we'll play for 3.5-4 hours. But it's more focused on the music. The live show, I do want it to be fun. I want people to be entertained by watching us. But it's certainly not the same in the punk rock days when I would be jumping all over the stage and it was more of a interaction with the audience. Larkin is, it is a performance, and we do want people to sing along, and I do try to bring some of that punk rock element into those shows. But the dynamic is just a bit different, and it's almost like if you have different files of different personalities in your head, and I pull one out for the punk shows and pull another one out. So I'm not saying I'm portraying a character, but you almost are. You're only allowing certain part of your personality out for certain gigs, you know, and the part of me for Larkin gigs is not the same for the punk gigs, you know. I mean, there's some similarities, obviously, because I'm the same dude and my voice is not going to change. But yeah, so there is a different dynamic between the two, and I think a lot of it's just presentation.
So let's switch gears once again, because you make this huge jump from playing traditional Irish folky punky kind of stuff to just real heavy sludge metal, which, you know, I know you, and it makes sense to me, because, you know, it's just, I feel like it makes sense for your personality, but it has to be a huge jump when you're going from one to the other, right?
Yeah, very much so.
What's it like making that big switch? Like, what do you have to do to get yourself in the mindset?
Yeah, that is weird. Like I was saying, in a sense, you almost have to pull a file out of your head and go to that space and only focus on that space. For senior fellows shows, I'd have to get into a really dark place. And that took a little while to snap out of it after the gigs. But I think it was the kind of band and the kind of performance I wanted to give. At least what I saw I could do was that. And I wanted to present it a certain way. But in order for me to get there, I guess you would call it like a character actor. Like, I have to get to a certain mental place that's miserable and angry and you know, like the Michael Jira Swan stuff, you know, a lot of self-loathing and a lot of anger, you know, parts of my personality that are there, but I just wanted to focus on those. Like with Larkin, it's more poetic and somewhat romantic in a sad way, but you're also laughing about it. I mean, that's the Irish culture, is laugh about the misery. And Senior Fellows, there was no laughter whatsoever about the whole thing. It was all about, you know, anger and misery and darkness. So you almost have to flip that switch, and it was hard for me. It wasn't so hard to get into. I kind of would just go into like this mental weird place, but it was hard for me to snap out of. Like after the gigs, I'd go home and just kind of be exhausted and fulfilled that I got to perform, but I would definitely be in a dark place for me.
Is that why maybe you don't do that anymore?
No. The Senior Fellows, unlike everything else I've done, well, not everything. I mean, most things I've done, I usually have a firm hand on the formation and the activities of the band. Like, I'll manage most of them. I mean, not completely. Actually, Dalton's been doing a lot of stuff with The Shame. You know, I still write the songs and book the shows per se, but he handles a lot of the business aspect of it. But with Senior Fellows, it was different because this was James. It was James' band. Dustin was a singer before me. They had another singer after him. I liked them, and I love James to death. He's brilliant. But it wasn't really my style of music per se. I mean, I love metal, sure. But I'm more of a fast thrash dude. You know, if you would have put me in a band that sounded like Slayer, I probably would have done that in a heartbeat. But in Senior Fellows, it was James. And I had run into him periodically, and we've been friends since, you know, he was the first bass player for Larkin. I mean, we've been friends for a long time. And we had a band, we had The Leveling, and we had Bring Down the Hammer, and then we kind of quit doing that. And with Senior Fellows, he took charge of, it was his band. And then they needed a singer. I was writing lyrics for the singer, and then that didn't work, so I just started singing. So point being, after the last tour, the drummer and James had a falling out. No reason to go in any details. I mean, and James, we did not have a replacement, is really what it boiled down to. Not anybody, because he is extremely high standards, and it's a very complex band. Yes, it's sludge metal, but there's a lot going on. It's in my opinion, you have to know higher math to do this band, and finding a proficient drummer that wants to play that and can play it is very difficult. And so once we were in that position, it just, similarly to Bring Down the Hammer, when we didn't have Benny in the band anymore, we just didn't go on because we're missing that piece. And so neither band are broken up. We're just not doing them. And if James called me today and asked me to do the Senior Fellows again, he's got a new lineup, I'd be more than happy to at least try if my voice could handle it.
You would be willing to put yourself back into that dark place?
Oh, I go there anyway. I might as well get something out of it.
I don't know. Is that a healthy thing for you to do? Does it maybe give you some catharsis?
I think so. I almost view it as therapy sometimes. You know, I mean, you've played music. You know, that getting out your frustrations and your anger in a relatively healthy way. I mean, it's still somewhat self-destructive the way I destroy myself live sometimes. But getting that out, I could see that is very therapeutic to a point, certainly.
So at this point, I don't know if thousands is the right number, but I'm just going to guess that you've written thousands of songs since you've been in probably thousands of bands.
Well, I have everything that I could find that I've recorded, records, demo tapes, blah, blah, blah. I think the number of recorded songs is around 300.
And that's a pretty good amount.
I'm more than happy about it.
That's a pretty good amount, considering that people like most of them. Or, you know, people in...
That's relative.
People, well, people who like the type of music,
sure,
like most of them.
I've been real flattered with, you know, when the bands that I've done have gotten a decent amount of support, so I've got no complaints.
I think maybe in high school I wrote 300 songs, but nobody liked a single one of them, so, you know.
I've got a lot more than what has been recorded.
I think it's definitely an accomplishment to have that many songs. But my question is, do you have one that stands out to you or that means a lot to you still to this day?
A lot of them for different reasons. You know, politically, certain ones mattered a lot to me. It's sort of like asking my favorite band. I couldn't just say, you'd have to narrow it to metal or hardcore or folk music because they're all different and I can't lump them and grade them together. But like, certainly during the Brother Inferior years, when I was writing stuff like Profit and Loss, was always a favorite, and one called Who Wants to Live Forever, which was more of a take on religion, and I would try to attack these philosophical points in those songs at least somewhat, and that kind of mattered to me. I was trying to take a different approach than a lot of punk bands and try to not just yell about things that piss me off but ask questions to get someone to think. And so those pop in my mind, and later one like Democracy in the Workplace always stuck with me for Bring Down the Hammer. But lots of Larkin songs, because I think I did a lot more self-reflection and in Larkin. And that's really hard to quantify because I'm not used to putting my personal feel, I mean, other than just anger, which is an emotion, but you know, other than just anger, I'm not used to putting my personal feelings out in music form. So a lot of the Larkin songs lyrically would matter a lot to me because they get pretty personal. And I would say one other one from the old days would be Bastard Son, that I wrote for Brother Inferior, mainly because that was a honest reflection of my struggles with my childhood. And we'll just say that there was a lot of unpleasantness, and I really tried to be honest with myself about how I felt and wrote that. And so, yeah. And lots of Senior Fellows, but Senior Fellows was a different thing because James would basically give me an idea. And some of those I really like where I went with them, but James would give me the idea and then I would write the tune. So that's a whole different discussion.
I remember talking to you probably around 2009, 2010.
Okay.
Bring Down the Hammer was playing at, I think it was still Under the Mooch at the time. It may have been Tulsa Backwards.
I think it was Under the Mooch. At least I don't remember the Tulsa Backwards being a name. So.
Okay, so it must have been Under the Mooch. You were opening for The Body.
Oh, yeah. They're heavy as hell.
Oh, my gosh. I remember sitting outside on the curb next to you because they were playing so loud and I didn't have earplugs.
It was brutal.
Anyway, you were talking about starting a new oi band,
right?
And writing about being old and
old,
soccer.
Bald and drunk.
Yes, exactly. And I said, you need a bassist. You're like, no, you're not old enough.
That sounds like me.
And so maybe, I don't know, less than a year later, the shame started up.
Right.
It always seems to me like you have this idea for what's next in music for you. Like when we were walking into the building, you were like, yeah, I'm working on this hardcore record. What do you want to do next? What do you want to do in the future? Where do you want to take your songwriting and your playing?
Well, considering if the pandemic keeps going like it seems to be, folk music by myself, just writing singer-songwriter stuff on guitar, which would be kind of nice. I've always, and I still want to rely on the talent of others. Like, I feel so much more comfortable playing with, you know, Dalton, especially, and Karen, all the people in Larkin, you know. So if I write something that's a basic, decent song, they add so much to it. I would like to do more of that, maybe a little more Americana, but like I said, I've been having the hardcore itch. There's so much to bitch about over the last year or decade, if you will, that it seems like I've got a lot of pent up that I need to say. So hardcore always seems like going back old school, you know, like the Brother Inferior type hardcore, as opposed to the like blast beat thrash and Bring Down the Hammer or something, a little more, I won't say melody per se, but a little more tune to it, if you will. But I think that's next. And I mean, I've been trying to learn the banjo on the side, but that's just to, you know, keep my mind occupied. And I love the traditional Irish banjo. It's a pretty fascinating instrument. So I don't know. We'll see. You know, I'll get a wild hair and just kind of follow it. You know, there are a lot of other music styles that I'm fascinated with, but I just don't have the talent for. You know, I could never do jazz or anything like that. I mean, I like old school big band jazz and stuff, but I can't imagine trying to write anything like that other than lyrically maybe. But yeah, or old school country is actually kind of fascinated me as well.
So the Chad Malone all banjo old school country album 2021.
Yeah, maybe.
Chad Malone, thank you so much for talking with us.
Ah, Tips, good to see you, man. Thanks for asking me out here.
In 1649, St. George's Hill, a ragged band they called the Diggers came to show the.
That's all for this episode of Press Play OK. Thanks again to Chad Malone for coming out and talking with us about his decades of experience in the Tulsa music scene. Also, thanks to Musicians Haven for making this podcast possible. Make sure you follow Press Play OK on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever it is you listen to podcasts. Join us next time for another deep dive into Oklahoma musicians on Press Play OK.